Welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. I am the DJ, and with me today, I have the Professor.
Hello, DJ.
Hi, Professor. Right. Forgetting Divi. We have Divi Boy, but he's gone.
It's okay, DJ. You'll move on. Until he comes back and then goes again, and then we'll have to go through this all over again.
You know, I'm at my third bottle of beer right now, just to try and get over it.
Well, technically, it's only binge drinking if it's in one sitting. So, since he hasn't been here, and we know he hasn't for 2 weeks, that doesn't tell us a lot. But if you're telling us you're an alcoholic, it's okay. You can be open with me.
Yes. And the next thing you'll know, you'll see me at one of those alcohol rehab clinics, and I'll have a sobriety chip. They're like, I am 100 days free from alcohol. So what have you been up to, Professor?
Oh, dealing with some of the worst customer service ever. I was told, okay, so I went to a company and I was told this would be done in 2 days. I say, okay, can you let me know because it's urgent. We need it by the morning of the second day, if possible. And they said, okay. On the first day, they said, it's 70% done. We need to do a bit more. Then on the second day at about midday, I called up and said, can you follow up? Has there been any update? And they said they hadn't started it yet.
What?
Yeah.
Wait. So what was the 70% then?
I don't know.
It must have been like, oh, we're 70% done and slacking off.
Yeah, are they slacking off? Did they not actually start?
Who was saying the 70%? The intern?
Well, I spoke to 3 different people, so I guess that's it. So anyway, it's now been 3 days, and I haven't heard back from them.
Oh, man. The funny part is it's tech-related stuff. Normally, tech-related stuff takes, like, quick now. Like, with this current day and age and how technology is so easily available.
Often it can be quick and easy, but this is one case where it has not been.
Oh, man. Oh, dang. That's...
What about you, DJ?
At my end, I've been dealing with car situations. Mine was some idiot decided to smash my car window, and I didn't notice it until I was about to go somewhere, and I put in the car. I was like, yeah, cool. I opened the door and I see the other window. I'm going, what the hell?
That reminds me of Elon showing off the windows on the Cybertruck.
What happened to that one?
He walked out on stage and said, I don't remember the exact wording, but it's along the lines of the windows are bulletproof or very strong, whatever terminology he used. He then throws, I think it's a golf ball-sized ball bearing at the window, and it just goes straight through. And he's like, well, that didn't work, and tries it again, straight through again. So clearly the demonstration model did not have the bullet. Yeah, what he does do is entertaining.
Yeah, especially his Twitter.
Have you bought into Doge yet?
Oh, don't get me started. I will say this, though. It's going to the moon! Anyways, so speaking of going to the moon, you've got a story about Nintendo Switch going up and up and up.
Yes, a new slightly bigger screen.
Ooh.
So a few weeks ago, there was a rumor that the next Switch would have an OLED because people had managed to find out that Nintendo was investigating OLEDs. But they've now come out and had a credible leak that the Switch Pro, so we now have the Switch Lite, the Switch, and the Switch Pro. Switch Pro will have a 7-inch OLED and be able to display in 4K when docked.
Ooh, that's a... Ooh.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild is going to look so good.
But that's so weird, though, on a small screen, though. That's...
Well, no, it's not 4K in handheld, only when docked.
Okay.
So you'll need a 4K TV. Okay. Handheld, I believe, was still looked like it was going to be the same resolution, which I think is 720.
Okay.
Now, not that I'm complaining about more pixels, and it will be based on NVIDIA DLSS, because the Switch itself runs on NVIDIA Tegra, so the Switch Pro will be using presumably a newer generation NVIDIA chipset.
Makes sense. But it'd be so weird, though, like once you get the Nintendo Switch out of dock and you're playing it on handheld, it'd be like, oh, crud, the graphics quality.
Yeah, it is hard to go back to lower resolution screens. So I'm not sure why, like, who would buy this, though. I mean, people who want 4K, obviously. But if they do confirm and release this, they're going to be splitting their market. So any developers will have to make multiple versions of the games. Like when the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One S came out.
Yeah.
So if you want to target the most consumers, you naturally target the lower range console. So some games might get a better, a graphics patch that will let them run in better graphics on Switch Pro. Maybe they might just not bother. And I think the strength of the Switch is the portability. But most of the games on the Switch aren't that impressive looking to begin with. They look nice because they're stylized and well put together, but they're not going to win any photorealism awards.
I mean, a pro version of a Nintendo Switch, I mean, it's at this point, it's like, yeah, we're just copying what everyone's been doing.
It does kind of feel like it might be the way. In the last couple of weeks, I've also heard that they consider Switch to be sort of at the middle of its life cycle.
Middle?
Yeah, so we've had 3 years, and we'll get another 3 years out of it before they release Switch 2, or whatever they're going to call it.
the Switcheroo, Switcher 2, or something crazy like that.
Switcheroo, I like that.
The Switcheroo, like, just make it like the same design, but might make it more beefier or something like that.
Beefy would be nice. Fix the damn joysticks. Yeah, it's fix the joysticks, please.
But that being said, though, like, like I said, my gripe would be the graphic resolution just going back from 4K to 720. Imagine playing like Zelda and like you're watching a walkthrough and say, like, oh, you go to this waterfall and you can find this mysterious item. And then you go 720, it's like, oh, the waterfall looks so bad.
Yeah, I think Zelda will look pretty good anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I'd really like to see out of this is just a more robust controller.
Mm.
And maybe a sort of ergo controller. I've been thinking of, if I ever get a 3D printer, custom printing backs for the controllers so that it's more comfortable to hold in portable mode.
Don't reveal it, man. Don't give Nintendo ideas. if you say that, Nintendo will come up with a subpoena and go, yep, cease and desist.
Possibly. But what I really want is more robust joysticks.
Yeah, yeah.
The joystick is the key.
That being said, though, what other features besides 4K have they announced on with the Nintendo Switch Pro? It sounds so weird. They should seriously, Nintendo, you gotta come up with a better name than that.
Well, PS4 Pro work.
Yeah, why, it's PS4 Pro. That's why it's like, yeah.
Why is Switch Pro an issue?
I mean, it's like I said, it's just copy. It's just like jumping on the PlayStation 4 bandwagon kind of thing. It's a bandwagon effect.
No, Pro is just a term. Sony doesn't own the name Pro. Sony doesn't own Pro. It's a generic term, so anyone can call anything Pro. You could launch a brand of Microwave Meal Pro if you wanted to.
Microwave Meal Pro. Better than your average microwave meal.
Yeah, that could be the advertising if you want.
Yeah.
Look, I'm kind of excited because some games can really take advantage of the hardware, particularly the ports of some of the PC ports of AAA games like Doom are really good.
Mm.
And it would be nice to have better graphics in them, higher frame rate maybe.
I heard Apex Legends is going to be on Nintendo Switch and it could be on the Pro as well.
Again, that's a case where it's not a graphical stunner. And it doesn't have to be because it's they want the most people possible to play Apex Legends. That's why free-to-play games, apart from limited budget, they don't tend to push graphics. They'll try to look nice, sure, but if you make your game, you know, if you go full Crysis, then you are limiting your multiplayer community to a tiny percentage of the gaming community.
Mm.
Which is, I'm sure you can understand, a bad idea.
Yeah. With bad ideas, you must have heard about what's happened with Microsoft lately.
Oh, I am so glad my company seems to have avoided that. Because 30K, like 30,000 companies in the US were hacked through their exchange servers.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And let me guess, you must have got a lot of phone calls saying, hey, fix this.
Well, I'd actually had a day off that day.
Oh.
And I'm just looking at it like, oh, no. I am not looking forward to going in to fix this. Luckily, the other people seem to have sorted it out.
Oh, but still, what must have been fun, though, just seeing all the carnage unfold.
Yeah, it's nuts. So much when, like, it's gone so horribly wrong.
So what was the issue, though?
I haven't actually looked into a whole lot of it yet, but Microsoft Outlook has a self-managed option. So you can choose to either have your emails handled by Office 365, which is Microsoft servers, or by your own servers. And it seems like there was a hack that managed to break into Exchange server. So any company hosting their own emails, aka a lot of companies that have to deal with government restrictions, the reason for that is that in a lot of cases, if you work with government data, they don't want that leaving the country. So unless Microsoft has a data center in your country and you can guarantee that it's not going to leave the country, so it will stay in that data center, which in Australia you can. But you self-host your own email server. So the bad guys, the US are blaming, well, Microsoft are blaming China. It's going to take a little while to investigate and find out if it's a particular team, find out if they have a name. Like, all of the Russian hacker teams are given names something bear.
It would be pretty funny if it's the same organization that hacked into CD Projekt Red.
Yeah, that was, what's the name of it?
Something Kitty.
Hello Kitty Group.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't remember what the Chinese hacking teams are called. So, yeah. The other big issue is with the web version of Outlook. It's flawed. It's rather flawed. It's really easy to get onto if you steal somebody's account, especially if they don't have MFA set up. We actually had to disable that to meet government regulations at the company I work at. But it appears to be the way in. So Outlook server and Outlook webmail are the way in. Microsoft is still investigating, and they think 30,000 companies could have been hacked.
Oh.
So it's very, very important if you host your own exchange to get on and patch it, because they reckon they've patched the issue. And if you don't patch it, you're still open. So good luck.
So in other words, don't open any dodgy emails that has cat photos in it.
Yeah, that could be why. I don't know how the how they got in exactly, whether it's phishing or not.
Yeah. This does not look good on Microsoft, does it? Doesn't it?
No, it doesn't really. But it won't hurt them because nobody else does what they do on the scale they do. with the kinds of nobody provides what they provide.
So moving along, so Professor, you've got an interesting science story about a real working warp drive.
Theoretically, real working warp drive. It hasn't been built yet, but that's the tricky part. But the theory behind this is based on Alcubierre drives. So a theoretical physicist, Miguel Alcubierre, created the concept of this drive and the way it might work. And it's really interesting because what it does is stretch space behind it and contract space in front of it. So you're warping the fabric of space-time to go faster than the speed of light. But it would take boatloads of energy.
Oh, yeah. How much boatloads are we saying here? Like 5 nuclear reactors? 10 nuclear reactors?
Possibly more than exists in the universe.
Oh,
that's one of the theoretical limits. So, yeah, one of the theoretical limits is that it could use so much more power than actually exists in the universe, it cannot ever be created. That's the thing about a lot of theoretical physics. It'll be something that might not actually be physically possible. It's theoretically possible, but not in the universe we live in. But the good news is this new model of, well, new design of Alcubierre drive doesn't use negative energy. Negative energy is just kind of exotic matter. And as we currently understand, it cannot be created and might not actually exist in known.
Yeah, it doesn't use dark matter as well.
Yeah.
Hmm. I like it how they see here that essentially the Alcubierre drive would expend a tremendous amount of energy to contract twist space-time in front of it and create a bubble. Inside the bubble would be an inertial reference frame where explorers would feel free, no proper acceleration. The rules of physics would still apply within the bubble, but the ship would be localized outside of space.
Yeah, so theoretically, you wrap your ship in one of these space-time bubbles and pop it out of the universe, like physically out of the universe, and then pull it back in wherever you want it to go.
That's like something out of the TARDIS would, wouldn't it?
Well,
theoretically, yeah.
It's there's a few different explanations for how the TARDIS works, and that's one of them. So it's not, not even the only way to do it, though, based on this new theoretical model. And Alcubierre approves of it. So the guy who came up with the original model approves of this new model. Now, it's probably a long way off, but this is exciting on a theoretical level. I reckon it might not even happen in our lifetimes.
Nah, it'll be centuries or thousands of years before we actually get Star Trek level time travel or Star Trek level travel.
It could be. It would, I think, depend on the amount of energy required. I think a big limiting factor in theoretical physics is energy. Lots of things are theoretically possible if you have all of the energy. So even on Earth, in practical, non-theoretical physics, a lot of things need energy. Like pulling carbon out of the atmosphere requires energy. Most of the ways to do that haven't actually been proven carbon negative. Depending on the source of your energy would depend on whether your energy carbon capture is carbon neutral or not.
Correct. The tough part would be, let's say, for example, if the warp drive finally works, will we see another space race happening? I know I've said that so many times.
A race to create a warp drive?
Yeah.
Yeah. A race to get to a particular location? Well, once you've got the warp drive, you can go anywhere.
Can you imagine?
The entire universe is your oyster.
Oh, can you imagine just like a warp drive just to go into the Milky Way and come out of it?
Screw the Milky Way. Anywhere in the universe, DJ. Andromeda. And that's even just a close one. You don't have to stop at Andromeda. You can go anywhere. Anywhere, DJ.
This is Star Wars level crazy. It'll be Star Trek level insanity.
once you have warp drives, nothing can stop you. Literally nothing. You can go anywhere. You can do anything. You want more energy? Go and build a bloody Dyson sphere. That's how exciting warp drives are. Because once you've got them, you can do anything.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Can warp drives surpass the speed of light, though?
That's the point.
Wait, what do you mean? That's the point.
The point of a warp drive is to go faster than the speed of light. Like, theoretically, in regular physics, nothing can go faster than the speed of light. What makes the warp drive interesting is that you're not going faster than the speed of light by, like, accelerating really fast. You're going faster than the speed of light by leaving the universe and coming back in somewhere else. Like, think of it as if you have a piece of paper and you put two marks on it, and then draw a line between it. That's the shortest way in physical space. The fastest way with a warp drive is to fold the paper in half and just push a hole through it.
You know what's going to be insane as well about this? It'll be like a science fiction imitating life. Or is it the other way around?
I think you mean life imitating art.
Yep, that's the one.
Because sci-fi has been talking about warp speed for years. And the Albuquerque drive theoretical model only goes back to, you know, 94.
So one could say only time will tell?
Yeah. Will we create a warp drive that we can build and operate before the end of humanity? Will any species in the universe create a warp drive before the heat death of the universe? Who knows? The only way to find out is by waiting until it happens.
That will be a great Doctor Who episode if I ever see one.
What would the plot be? Just waiting.
Yeah, the Doctor just waiting for another warp drive to fuel his TARDIS.
Kind of, yes. I mean, most recently there was the Master was stranded and had to wait for a future version of the Master to travel back in time with the part to fix the TARDIS.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That actually happened?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just the first example that comes to mind. There's others.
That's fair enough. Anyways, in the interest of time, we should move on. So, speaking of Doctor Who, more details of the Christopher Eccleston audio dramas have been released. So, it's set to be released in May 2021, and it's called Doctor Who, the Ninth Doctor Adventures. Ravager sees the Doctor on a voyage of discovery once more with new friends and adventures in three tales, penned by Nicholas Brigg, who is the Big Finish creative director.
And yes, Nicholas Brigg is a big guy in the fandom.
Ooh, do tell.
Well, he's the kind of guy who wrote tons of content about Doctor Who, and in the TV show, he plays the Cybermen and the Daleks.
That's fun.
Yeah. So apart from acting and writing for Big Finish, he's in the main show as a voice actor, although I've seen a lot of fans who want him to actually be a companion at some point. That'd be a fun little self-referential thing, have him battling the Cybermen.
That'd be fun. So rounding out the cast, so we have Jamie Parker, who's playing as Captain Holloran, Dan Starkey as Marcus Aurelius Gallius, Ben Lee as Lieutenant Faraday, and Claire Cobert as the terrifying Ravages. The four join Eccleston as, well as previously announced cast members, Camilla Beput as Nova and Jane McKenna as Audrey.
Some of those are even other characters in Doctor Who. Like, if I say there's only six actors in England, it's because there is. And they just get recycled over and over. Dan Starkey, he plays Strax the Sontaran.
Oh, yeah!
And now he's playing a different character in the audios. Peter Capaldi himself had two different appearances in Doctor Who-related stuff before being the Doctor.
Oh, yeah,
I remember. Once in Doctor Who and once in Torchwood.
Yeah, and yeah, I remember now. In Doctor Who, he was in Doctor Who, he was part of the Greek, was it? Yeah, Pompeian family.
Yeah, were you going to say Greek?
Yeah, yeah.
You know that's in Italy.
Yep,
They were Romans.
Yep.
Yeah, he was, I don't quite remember how to say it. Caecilius, I think?
I think it's Caecilius. I think.
Okay. Yeah. He plays him in Pompeii, and in Torchwood Children of Earth, he plays a government advisor. Yeah. So they like using other Doctor Who actors in the show.
So the story goes, on the sphere of freedom, the Doctor is about to shut down an evil immersive games business empire. Immersive games. Well, are we taking? Is this a subtle dig at EA?
Probably a dig at virtual reality.
Oh, yeah.
That's what sci-fi is for.
So he's assisted by the valiant galley chef called Nova, but his plan spectacularly fails. Now the Doctor must fight back to discover what could have caused everything to go badly wrong. His journey takes him via Piccadilly Circus in 1959, Belgium 1815, and far-flung future worlds where machine intelligence regards sentient life as mere biofuel. Where have I seen these plots before? Like the machines regarding sentient life as mere biofuel. That feels like a Matrix ripoff.
Yeah, kinda.
Yeah.
It's not even a new concept in The Matrix, though. I'm pretty sure, I don't remember which one it is off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that's a concept in a book I've read from, like, the 70s.
So I could continue on. So where does the mysterious old-timer Audrey fit in? Is the alien beverage Chagnazi, I'm going to butcher this one. Chaganzi safe to drink? And is there really anything the Doctor can do to stop the entire universe from being devoured? That's a good plot.
Yeah.
So here they've extended the adventures to the following titles. So you got Sphere of Freedom. On the Sphere of Freedom, the Doctor is about to shut down evil immense. So who exactly is Audrey? Then you have Cataclysm. So Nova is dislocated in time while the time eddies are out of control. Meanwhile, the Doctor is about to face the end of the universe. Or is that just the Battle of Waterloo? And Food Fight. The TARDIS is starting to get a little crowded. Audrey finds herself haunted by a ghostly Doctor. So those are the three new titles for the audio drama so far.
I think what's got people most excited is that it's more Christopher Eccleston.
Oh, yeah. I mean, given what's happened with the recent Doctor Who news in terms of the with the female Doctor leaving the series and lukewarm reception.
Not even that. Christopher Eccleston was pretty popular. He only had 1 year because it turns out he was dealing with his own issues at the time. He came out recently, like in the last year or so, and said that he had anorexia at the time.
Mm.
And that he didn't get along with the production team because he thought the production team were pushing people too hard and taking advantage of them. So he doesn't really want anything to do with the TV show anymore. He actually refused to come back for the 50th anniversary. Original script planned to have him as the War Doctor.
Oh, I would have loved to see him as that.
Yeah, I mean, John Hurt was incredible, but it would have been great to have Christopher Eccleston there.
Yeah. Given the lukewarm reception we had with the female Doctor, though, do you reckon this audio drama will buy back a bit of good faith with the fandom?
No.
No?
The people who listen to Big Finish are already a fraction of the people who watch Doctor Who. You need to be, like, I don't want to gatekeep, but the people who listen to Big Finish tend to be really serious fans. It's not anywhere near as advertised. The production budget is lower. It's audio, so it's harder to get into. And it's harder to actually get into to find and listen to it than it would be to just watch the TV every Sunday night.
So would you be getting the series?
I've been meaning to get into Big Finish, so maybe this will be what I start with. But yeah, I have definitely been planning to get into Big Finish at some point. I just have never gotten around to it.
That's fair. For those interested in getting the audio drama, so you can go to the Big Finish website and pre-order it, and they're starting from £19.99. Shillings and cents?
Pence.
Pence.
The Thank shilling. You.
The shilling.
What year is it, TJ?
I'm sorry, I've just been watching so many old-timey British shows.
Go blimey, governor, a whole shilling. I'll be able to feed my family for a month.
So these ones will be available in three formats: collector's edition CD, digital download, or limited edition gatefold triple LP vinyl. Ooh.
That would be a nice collection to have.
Oh, yeah.
Vinyls of all the big finish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It would take up most of your house, though. There's a lot of big finish.
Definitely, definitely. A pre-order bundle of all the volumes is available just for £88. That's the collector's edition box set, or £78 for download, while the triple LP vinyl can be pre-ordered at £35.99 each, or £132 for the bundle of all four albums. Although I will say this, though, with the additional cast, there, from what I'm gathering, they're all saying, like, yeah, this is a good project. This is good. Like, one saying, I mean, it's Doctor Who. Isn't it? It's iconic. It's very energetic. It's full of action. What I really enjoyed doing.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Obviously, I'm hoping this goes better for Christopher Eccleston than being on the show did. I'd hate for him to have another bad experience working on Doctor Who.
Yeah. Apparently, one of the actresses, McKenna, this is her first time experience caught her eye with the script and hooked her in from there. She exclaims, I love the script. It's the first time I've been in something like this. It's just fantastic. What's lovely is working with people that's so invested in this and having a chance to play a character at different stages of her life. That's a great gift of being given as an actor. I think that's a very nice gesture.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me, DJ.
Yeah.
Another episode about waiting for the TARDIS to come back. Not really the Doctor, but the girl in the fireplace. So the Doctor is separated from the TARDIS. I don't remember exactly how. And he uses these time gates between a spaceship and France to meet up with Madame de Pompadour.
what a name. Who names a person like that?
Well, Madame de Pompadour's parents, obviously.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so the Doctor ends up visiting her half a dozen times across her life.
So, Professor, what nerdful thing have you done?
I've been trying out a game called Kingsway.
Ooh.
It's a classic style RPG adventure sort of thing, but it's presented, the UI is literally like a computer. What? So Windows 95 or so style graphics. The elements are all like pop-ups and windows and folders. So your bag and the things in it are folders.
No way. This looks like Windows 95.
Yeah.
For a second there, I thought that was someone has remarketed Temple OS and has put it on Steam. What's the biggest issue with this game you've encountered?
I haven't really found any so far. Maybe the difficulty curve spikes too quickly, or that could just be me making mistakes and going the wrong way. Supposedly, the further east you go, the more difficult it gets. So I might have just gone east too early.
I'm just looking at the trailer on the Steam page, which will be available in our show notes. So it's a typing adventure?
No, at least not any part that I've gotten to yet.
Okay.
It's point and click so far. So you go into combat and a window pops up of an enemy with the options you have and the enemy's health and stuff. The window actually moves around the screen to make it a bit more difficult to click on.
So a new enemy pops up. It's a casino ad.
That would be nicely meta. There are other games I've played that have that sort of humor.
Oh, online gambling, the villain.
Yeah.
But I like the aesthetics of it. Like, it has a 90s feel to it, and it has the the pop-ups and the IRC look.
Yeah, it's very retro style.
So how many nerdy beanies would you give this one out of?
I think at this point, 3.5 out of 5.
Okay, fair enough.
What about you, DJ?
I have been watching an interesting video about an incredibly interesting person.
Me.
The professor. I've been watching a documentary about a video game lawyer known as Jack Thompson.
Oh, he's a piece of work.
Yeah, Jack Thompson, what a legendary guy this guy is.
Oh, he is known for being a colossal pain. Wasting time and money.
I saw the documentary and I'm just going, so he went first to radio stations and tried to attack people. Say like, oh, this song is terrible. This song is bad. This song is offensive. And then he ups the ante to video games. And my God, some of the games that he's explaining, it's so badly explained that.
Yeah, he's known for being either utterly incompetent or twisting the truth by ridiculous amounts.
Although some of the arguments he poses are very interesting. Like, he's 50% right, but he's also 50% wrong in terms of, like, what was he saying about the guns, for example? Like, for example, like, Jack was saying the enhanced realism of shooter games that had the danger of training kids, for example.
Yeah, the dumb theory that kids will learn how to be serial killers by playing games. I mean, no.
No?
No, because playing a game, even the most advanced simulator game, is still completely different from doing it in real life, especially something like killing someone.
I'll grant you that. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Although I like how at one stage Jack was so obsessed with trying to win something that he tried to run for politician, and who was the person that he was going up against? She was putting a bit of banter on him, and then he sued her.
Yep.
I was like, what?
Yep, some people are just ridiculous.
I gotta say, he is the... should I say it? Like, he's the first version of the Karen.
No, there's older versions of Karen.
But yeah, that was a very funny documentary I was watching. And I like how in the ending, even though he's kind of mellowed out, he still likes to sue people and companies. Like, recently he's tried to sue Facebook for damaging him, apparently.
Yeah. That's basically how these people do it. Just frivolous lawsuits about everything.
His biggest one was how he tries to take on GTA.
Yeah, he has a real hatred for GTA. Probably because it's like the big thing. There are games that have worse content than GTA, but everybody knows GTA.
Oh, yeah.
Probably also because people like him keep going on about it.
And, oh, yeah. Like I said, there's a lot of things you could say about Jack. Like, you gotta watch the video and just have a good laugh.
Yeah.
How many dirty beanies would I give this one out of? I'll just give this a 4 out of 5. My biggest criticism is there were so many more. They should have explained it.
So what's the name of the documentary and who was it by?
It's by Count Dankula, and it's the documentary is called Absolute Mad Lads, The Video Game Lawyer, Jack Thompson. And it's a very funny video.
Yeah, I remember learning a lot about him in my first year of uni. We had more theoretical lessons about, you know, what makes a game, what sort of content is gamey, and he ended up coming up a reasonable amount. I think because one of the things we did cover a bit was, you know, can games have a negative effect on people and what are the ethics of making a game? This was before, like, I'd say before loot boxes went completely nuts.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I'd probably replace that with loot boxes if I did that course again.
I'm surprised Jack didn't do anything about that loot box fiasco.
He's a has-been. Nobody listens to him anymore.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
If he does want to take up arms against loot boxes, you know, I will support him all the way. But he doesn't care about loot boxes. He's in it for the easy money of pretending he cares about violent children and then blaming it on an easy scapegoat.
I like how this is another funny tidbit. Jack was so obsessed with trying to win court cases, he would it's too funny to say it. He would send threatening messages to judges. And he would even promote his book in the middle of court cases.
Yeah, sounds like a lunatic.
Can you imagine doing that in the middle of a court case? Like, that's madam, I rest my case. Also, please buy my book. Oh man, it's funny to watch. To any of our listeners, you should have a watch, and it'd be a good laugh.
Yeah.
So we'll take a short break and we'll be back with our shout outs, remembrances, famous birthdays, and events of interest.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So on to our shout-outs. Last year, COVID-19 spread through zoo animals. Now, on the 5th of March, apes in San Diego became the first non-human primates to be vaccinated against COVID-19. One, a 28-year-old ape named Karen, was also the first ape to have open-heart surgery in 1994. In more normal years, the apes receive human flu and measles vaccines.
Yeah, I bet the apes don't get autism, do they?
we went there. Oh man, can you imagine though, this if the vaccine does something crazier to the animals, it'll be the Planet of the Apes.
I knew you were going to go there.
hey.
I thought, do I put this in the summary? No, you'll do that anyway.
I don't know, man. I mean, we're kind of delving into science fiction territory here. I mean, something crazy can happen. So on the 8th of March, we passed the 50th anniversary of the Fight of the Century, a boxing match between Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. The pair were undefeated and drew extra viewers with their representation of both political wings, with Frazier being backed by pro-war conservatives and Ali backed by anti-establishment left-wing supporters. A statue has been unveiled with a plaque describing how the match went for 15 rounds before Frazier won. And this was the first out of the three fights between those two gentlemen.
So who won, like, best out of three, who won?
Ali.
Okay, because they were both undefeated when they did this fight, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And there was and this was the fight that split America, basically. You were either Camp Frazier or Camp Ali. So, and there were a lot of other significant events happening around that time. So there was the Vietnam War and the civil rights movements as well going on at the time. So, yeah.
Well, I don't follow combat sports, but are there any celebrity fighters you think would make an equal battle?
Ooh. There was a recent fight that came out. It was Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, yeah.
That was dubbed the Fight of the Century as well. And the amount of hype that came out of that one was insane. But a lot of people were hoping that we might get a rematch, so good luck with that one.
Between Manny and Floyd?
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't get along very well the first time, did they?
Nah, they didn't. There was, they didn't get along, and this was a fight that was hyped so much. Like, the first time they had it, there were a lot of people were like from both sides were accusing into what conditions and stuff. Then there was a second negotiations, but that was a rumor. And yeah, there were a lot of disputes. And the fight purse was insane. Like the first 160 million of revenue, and the revenue above 180 for the fight was split between 60-40 between the fighters, with Mayweather receiving 60%. You know, like I said, it was insane. Yeah, the only cringeworthy moment of that fight was Jamie Foxx singing the Star Spangled Banner, and man, was he roasted for that. So moving along, on the next day, on the 9th, Super Mario RPG passed its 25th anniversary. The first game, Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars, featured a timing-based, turn-based strategy game. It is regarded as sharing a podium with the great RPGs like Final Fantasy and Earthbound, and would hold up even without the Mario setting. Did you ever have fun playing that game, Professor?
No, I haven't played any of the Mario RPG games. Although this is the predecessor to the Paper Mario and what was the other one? Well, it's the predecessor to Paper Mario, but I haven't played that either.
Oh, yeah, and the Mario and Luigi series, that's the one.
That's it.
Yep. So on to our remembrances. On the 6th of March, Alan J. McDonald passed away. He was the director of the Space Shuttle Solid Rocket Motor Project at Morton Tinkel, producing the SRBs for shuttle launches. In 1986, he refused to sign off on Space Shuttle Challenger's fatal flight, realizing it was irresponsible to launch outside the known safe conditions for O-rings used in the boosters. The O-rings became fragile at low temperature and loud leaks, leading to Challenger's destruction with all crew perishing 73 seconds into the flight. McDonald said, "If anything happens to this launch, I wouldn't want to be the person that has to stand in front of a board of inquiry to explain why we launched." He sacrificed career progression to push for accountability, blaming NASA for pressuring MT into approving the launch to meet launch schedules. His work ensured the SRBs were redesigned. In his life, he published more than 80 papers, a book, and a chapter in the Encyclopedia of Aerospace Engineering. He died of brain injury after a fall at the age of 83 in Ogden, Utah. On the same day, Lou Ottens, a Dutch inventor, passed away at 94. After working on portable reel-to-reel recorders, Lou's team began planning a portable cassette recorder. He considered the RCA cartridge format, but created the smaller compact cassette format, first introduced in 1961. Ottens chose the size to fit the jacket pocket. A decade later, he became the director of Philips Audio, where he realized laser technology Philips plan to use for video records could be used for audio as well. Lou led the team to create a compact disc standard, which was announced on March 8, 1979, before Philips began collaborating with Sony on a universal standard. These are the most successful projects he led in audio, but he also worked on video formats. Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah, he's had a huge impact. And imagine living long enough to not only see your invention rise and fall, but create the successor.
I wonder what was his reaction when seeing the iPod. So onto our birthdays. Michael S. Hart, the inventor of ebook and founder of Project Gutenberg, celebrated his birthday. Hart published the first ebooks on ARPANET and founded Project Gutenberg in 1971 to preserve and share public domain content, especially books that have passed out of their copyright period. He hand-typed early books himself and was given a free account on the University of Illinois mainframe, where he hosted the first version of PG. By 1987, he typed 313 books. The mission statement he chose were: encourage the creation of distribution of ebooks, help break down the bars of ignorance and illiteracy, give as many ebooks to as many people as possible.
I like those goals.
Yep. He also chose his wording carefully to ensure his emails and blog posts had equal line lengths in monospaced font. That is, each line would have equal number of fixed width characters. He was born in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah, sounds like he might have been a little bit OCD.
I mean, I gotta hand it to the guy, though, like typing out 131 books in that format and proofreading them.
313.
Oh, right. 313 books and proofreading them all.
Yeah, all by himself. And that was just by 1987, so he could have done more later.
Oh, man. How many cups of coffee?
So much coffee.
Oh, man. So on to our events of interest. And on the 8th of March, 2016, They Came From the Ether debuted on DVD. Starring Travis L. Baker and Lindsay Bolin, the plot involves John Henry, a down-on-his-luck salesman who is given a chance at success by an alien visitor trading technology for help in human experimentation. Blinded by his ambition, the salesman opens a doorway in which the alien can develop the means to control the human race. It's left to Detective Mike Washburn, that's a crazy name, who is investigating the missing persons reports and to get to the bottom of these disappearances. So that's all we have for this week. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, bats.canada.com, where we archive of our old episodes. And you can find new That's Not Canon episode and podcasts such as Book Boys. So it's a brand new podcast all about books. And not only about books, but also about what they've been reading and making some recommendations and speaking to authors who call into the show. And you can also find us on YouTube, where we have a lovely video. But we'll be making some more nice YouTube videos for you to consume and enjoy.
Yeah, so look after yourselves and stay hydrated, and we'll see you next week.
See you guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.